Jackson, and this is Miracles Happen, Dreams Do Come True. And, you know, you may wonder why I have Patti LaBelle singing Are You Ready for a Miracle? Some people have told me that's pretty mainstream for what it is this show is about. And I don't think so. I think that we're here to bridge that. And I think that the whole planet is ready for miracles. And I think that that's why all of this Ascend a Master Teacher instruction is being revealed to the masses, because it's time for all of us, regardless of how we appear on the planet, to live a life of miracles the way God intended it to be on this planet. And we're being given a lot of light to do that. And one of the people that's doing that and bringing in that light and making it more available for everyone on the planet is the wondrous and awesome Peter Mount Shasta. Welcome, Peter.
Well, thank you, Iris. I hope I can live up to that.
I feel like... you don't have to live up to that. You are that, Peter. And
I was going to, excuse me.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to share something about, since we were going to talk about Saint Germain this time, and a lot of us feel that we're not wondrous and we're not, you know, doing anything spectacular and that we have very difficult, challenging lives. And I wanted to mention some of the things about Saint Germain's previous life, his last actual earthly life as Francis Bacon that a lot of people don't know about. People don't know about the challenges that he had, that he was abandoned by his parents. He was given to someone else to raise, so he was like sort of raised as an orphan. He was in delicate health. He had a lot of health challenges through his life. His parents wouldn't recognize him for who he was. And he had financial problems, lost money in various schemes. He had financial challenges all through his life. He volunteered to take the rap for something he didn't do and was jailed for that. So he spent time in jail.
It was also to protect other people, right?
Exactly, other people and the king. And even though the king kind of wasn't actually, you know, on the highest level morally, he believed in serving the king. He had sworn allegiance to the king. So rather than have the king take the rap for something that had happened, he stood up and took the blame himself and was accused of taking bribes and was arrested, put in jail, finally sentenced to house arrest, and he was fined an exorbitant amount of money. And actually, he ended his life in debt. He was in debt when he died. Of course, you know, we know that he didn't actually die when the history books say that he did, that he, there was no one present. I think there was only one person present at his funeral. And later, when the coffin was exhumed, they just found one bone in there. And that he went to Europe and worked with a group of initiates, worked with the Rosicrucians there. But I think it's, you know, when you realize the challenges that he had, then maybe that puts some of our own challenges in perspective.
Well, okay, I have about 10 questions about what you just said, okay?
Okay.
One is, I think that we're all recognizing that this is a planet to attain our mastery.
Absolutely.
That is the purpose of this. That is the purpose of this time, for all of us to claim our Christ self, our mastery, as Saint Germain has done.
Right.
As the ascended Jesus Christ has done, as Sanat Kumara has done. And I think that that's what the second coming is. So, but when I look at the life of Francis Bacon, as you have just described, I have felt that, you know, my task of mastery was to be like Saint Germain was in Europe, where he removed the flaws from jewels. He precipitated dinner. You know, my thing has always been to precipitate dinner and clean it up and unprecipitate the dishes the same way that he did for those dinner parties.
Sure.
And but I have felt that I couldn't do that, that I wasn't up to that, and that therefore I had failed. And if I had been Francis Bacon, I would have felt I had failed on every front.
Well, keep in mind that those stories of Saint Germain in Europe, he was then an ascended being. So the story is that as Francis Bacon was his last earthly embodiment, and that he went to the Himalayas and ascended from there, and then about, I don't know how many years later, maybe at least 50 years later, came back as an ascended master. And so these women who have records of him in their diaries that you can read about in Isabel Cooper Oakley's book, The Count of Saint Germain, these women who knew him, records of him being in two or three different countries in Europe on the same day that these various women, you know, met him in these different forms.
Well, I didn't mean to interrupt,
oh,
Peter,
no.
But I wanted to ask you to repeat the name and the author of that book.
Sometimes it's called The Count of Saint Germain, and sometimes it's spelled The Comte, C-O-M-T-E, the French spelling, De Saint Germain. And you can actually download it free. It's an ebook, and if you do a search on it, you can find it. And the author's name is Isabel Cooper Oakley. It's hyphenated, C-O-O-P-E-R hyphen O-A-K-L-E-Y. And it is available free online. Or you can, I think, buy it from Amazon. But it's wonderful excerpts of diaries and accounts of people that met him. These are not channelings or things that are fictitious. These are actual excerpts from diaries that are in the British Museum in London. So there are many, many amazing things that he did. Like he had this elixir that he gave to various women, and they would go on retreat for 40 days, and the hair would fall out and the teeth would fall out, but when they emerged from the room, they looked 40 years younger.
Oh, that would take a lot of courage.
That's quite an initiation. Yeah.
That's quite a lot of trust in him.
Absolutely.
So there are corroborated accounts of this happening.
And the people, they said Voltaire said he's the man who knows everything and who never dies, because people met him and then met him again 40 years later and said, I knew your father. And he said, no, madam, that was I. And they said, well, that's impossible. You don't look a day older than you did 40 years ago. And he said, well, I'm actually much older than you think. And he claimed to have been able to remember Jesus and, way back in history, he could give sort of eyewitness accounts as well as knowing what was going to happen in the future. So, I think it's unfair to judge ourselves in terms of who he was at that time. That's a noble aspiration that we can look forward to. But I think when you think of what he did as Sir Francis Bacon, the amount that he achieved despite the obstacles that he had. I mean, he went to Cambridge University at the age of, he graduated from Cambridge, I think, at the age of 17. And he started his law practice at the age of 18. And he was the youngest man ever to be in the House of Commons at the age of 23. And Thomas Jefferson said Francis Bacon was the greatest man one of the greatest men who ever lived. He was widely reputed to be the author of the Shakespeare plays, and also probably the man who oversaw the writing of the King James Bible. That's one reason the Bible is such beautiful literature, is that it's the same person that wrote the Shakespeare plays. And it's interesting, there's kind of a puzzle or a code in the Bible. If you look at the 46th Psalm, you look at the 46th word from the beginning of the Psalm and the 46th word from the end of the Psalm, and you put those two words together, it says Shakespeare. So I don't think that's by accident, but it's just sort of amusing that, anyway.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to run over you, but what is the significance of the 46th word, the 46th?
Well, it's a clue. If you, the 46th word is shake from the beginning, and the 46th word from the end of the 46th psalm is spear. So it says one more indication, and there are many other indications, but it's sort of one more clue that the editor of the Bible, or the editor of those psalms, was the same person as the author of the Shakespeare plays. Because the real William Shakespeare was illiterate and was a stable boy and couldn't even write his own name. So there are many theories about who actually wrote the plays, and really the only one around that had that type of universal knowledge was Francis Bacon. And there are many, many codes hidden in the plays where he says, I wrote the plays, and I am the son of Queen Elizabeth and the Earl of Leicester, and rightful heir to the throne of England. So although he never actually attained the throne, he did become the Lord Chancellor of England and basically the Attorney General under James. So anyway, he perhaps was able to achieve more good by not being king. But he was an extraordinary being that, to this day, he's known as one of the greatest geniuses that ever lived. But in spite of that, he still had these tremendous challenges. And in spite of being way ahead of his time and being very advanced spiritually, he still had to go through these outer ordeals, which I think, sort of gives me courage that with all the things that I've been through, not to be too down on myself, because it's through these challenges that we really grow.
Well, I think you're saying, let me see if I understand what you're saying here. I think you're saying that Saint Germain attained his ascension out of the life of Francis Bacon, and
right,
that he did ascend in that life. It looked like he
right,
died,
right,
but he actually went into deep and secret training.
Right. It seems that he went to Europe, and that for many, many years he'd been corresponding, in fact, through his whole life, he'd been corresponding with occult orders and various initiates in Europe. And that when he realized he really couldn't do any more in England, because he was under house arrest and he'd been slandered, so his reputation was in the mud, he said, well, there's no more I can really do here. So he staged this mock death, or staged feigned a death, and no one was in attendance. I think actually he had one attendant when he supposedly died, and there was only one person at his funeral, and then later when the coffin was exhumed, there was no body. So, and then there are stories of this mysterious stranger traveling around Europe who initiated people into various occult rites, and that he eventually went to the Himalayas, probably to Tibet, and achieved the ascension from a Tibetan Buddhist monastery there.
And then stayed on Earth as Saint Germain and Ascended Master.
Yeah, well, came back so he could appear here and there in various forms, however he wished, to help people. And there's some letters that are purported to come from other masters, and it's while they were still in a physical body in Tibet. There are letters that I've read. Now, I can't vouch for their total accuracy, but they're saying, one of these masters is saying to the other, I don't know what our good brother, Saint Germain, is doing in Europe. Those people are such animals. They're just bent on taking advantage of each other. Why doesn't he, come back and stay in retreat with us in the Himalayas? But his compassion was so great, that he wanted to be involved and engaged in human society so that he could contact as many people as possible and do as much good as he could. And I think that we now are some of the people that he contacted then, that he's with us again in this life to continue where we left off in the past lives. So, and then he, of course, was instrumental in the inception of the United States, the founding of the various colonies. In fact, he wrote a book back then called The New Atlantis. And that, you know, as a title, is like way, way ahead of its time.
Is this something that we can download or buy?
I'm not sure where that's available. I think you might be able to get it online. It's certainly available to buy, The New Atlantis by Sir Francis Bacon. It's sort of a novel that talks about a country, a mythical country in the future, but that country is really the vision he had for America, where people would not be ruled over by a king, and people would be self-ruled, and it would be a country where people knew that the ruler of each one was within themselves, where people got their own inner direction.
Wow. Sovereignty.
Sovereignty. Inner sovereignty, totally.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Go ahead.
He was someone way, way ahead of his time, and I think, you know, his message to us now is that this is an age when we have the freedom to realize our own sovereignty, and that believing in God also means believing in yourself, that he was the one responsible for taking the ancient teachings of Tibet and giving them as the I Am teachings now in a simpler form and in language that people can understand, so we don't all have to study Tibetan. And we don't have to follow lamas around, you know, that the essence of these teachings is given in a way that we can all understand, that we can all go within and contact our own God presence and not have to sit at the feet of somebody else and worship them.
Like that song, You Are the Guru.
Exactly. What he's saying, you believe in yourself, and when you believe in yourself, you can accomplish anything. You know, that's I think, the essence of the I Am, you know, is to meditate on that light in your own heart, and that's where the meditation comes in, being able to still the mind enough so you can feel that presence.
Well, I think I want to go back to all of the challenges that Sir Francis Bacon had, that I think what my ego has done with all the failures, like, for instance, you know, when you were talking about him, I thought, how could he, in the universe, with what he had given and accomplished, and led the way and all of that, how could he possibly be in debt? It defies cosmic law.
Well, I don't remember all the details, but he was raised as the son of Nicholas and I think it was Lady Anne Bacon. And they were not very, very wealthy, I don't think. And I don't remember all of the other things that happened. Oh, also I meant to mention his fiancée abandoned him because he didn't have enough money.
Yeah.
He was engaged to be married, and the woman ran off with someone else where she could get a better deal.
Oh.
And he found that devastating.
But,
and there also, he was the story of Romeo and Juliet was based on a personal experience that he had. His mother, who was Queen Elizabeth, sent him to Europe to get him out of her hair. Also, she wanted him to get a good education, but he had found out who he was, that that was actually his mother, and that he should have become the crown prince. And she was afraid that the her political opponents would back her son against her because they didn't, you know, they didn't think that a queen was fit to rule, and they were always trying to marry her off to somebody. So she sent him to France, and he fell in love there with a lady. And but see, he was then just presented as a commoner, that he was not of royal birth, although he was actually. The queen wouldn't acknowledge that. So all these comments in Romeo and Juliet about star-crossed lovers, you know, that were unable to be married. You know, and also the woman he was in love with had been married against her will to somebody else, even though it was just a marriage in name only. So that whole play about, you know, the star-crossed lovers was based on his personal anguish in that romance in France. I mean, you couldn't write that play without having a lot of passion.
Well, you know, not only that, there's a theme there, Peter, and it seems to be all the problems of the universe are based on and caused by people interfering with the freedom of someone else.
Absolutely.
You know, if I just stick to what I need to do to purify and master myself in my own life, it's a full-time job.
Well, I'll second that, you know.
I'm a handful.
Yeah, well, imagine that you're a ruler and people are judging you every day and you're in charge of a lot of other people and, you know, it increases your exposure quite a bit. But also, you know, well, you're so skilled with the use of the violet flame, and you bring that into your life so much that I think we should mention that's one of Saint Germain's great gifts now, that apparently he went before the High Council of the Great White Brotherhood and requested that the consciousness of the violet flame be given to humanity. And he was told, we'll give it to you, but on your responsibility. So if people mess up with it, you know, you're the one that will bear the karmic debt for it. And so he's given us those teachings, which I don't think have been given in any other culture. And that's to use that most purifying quality of light, which is the color violet, and to visualize that going forth wherever you are to purify the environment, but especially to purify ourselves, to dissolve our own karma. And that's probably the greatest thing we can do for our own evolution or for somebody else. You know, instead of arguing with them or telling them they should change or they're not doing it right, just visualize them sort of enfolded in a neon tube of violet light. And that's the greatest gift you can give them.
Wow. You know, I was told by one person, like I was giving out the violet flame and a really powerful decree of it on my television show.
Mm-hmm.
I was told by someone who was sure she was very right that I was giving out spiritual secrets, you know, cosmic secrets to the masses that weren't ready for it, and if I did that with people that weren't ready to receive it in a mass consciousness kind of way, that then when they were ready, they wouldn't open the door, and their souls delays into the light would be my responsibility. And I was able to trust myself enough to say, you know what? I don't work for you. I work for the boss.
That's good.
I work for Saint Germain. I do what he directs.
That's great. Yeah.
And, you know, Peter, one of the things I like to do is everyone who works with Saint Germain and works with the Violet Flame, I like to ask them on the show, you know, in a way so people can reuse it themselves, the way they invoke the violet flame and use the violet flame in their lives. And I wanted to kind of go back to Francis Bacon here, because all of these conditions that he was exposed to, all of these, all of the things that were played out in Romeo and Juliet, and they're really a morality tale.
Sure.
Of what happens when you interfere with other people and their sovereignty, and the tragedy that that is, you know, the waste of love, the waste of joy.
Well, imagine if Queen Elizabeth had overcome her fear and had acknowledged him as the rightful heir to the throne. Imagine if Francis Bacon had been King of England, you know, what possibly could have been done then. Although he was so far ahead of his time, you know, I don't know how many other people were near him that he could have relied on. So I'm sure things unfolded as they were meant to, but nonetheless, it was a very, you know, there was a very difficult time.
Well, don't you think that when somebody of great light like that is called into a situation, and he basically lived through every core issue on this planet that where people cause each other suffering. The, you know, denying their child.
Oh, sure.
You know, everything that needed cleaning up here, and I'm sure the Violet Flame was called into those things. Like, if I get called into something where I notice with my vision that I can see there is something that is illegal, that is, you know, sort of to subdue people.
Sure.
I call the troops, Peter. I call the Violet Flame, and you know, I feel like we of us who are embodied here, we're the SWAT team.
Right, that's a good analogy.
But we call the legions of light into everything that we connect with, and sometimes, like some of the things I've been called into lately, have to do with big banking.
Mm.
And I say something like, "You guys didn't know who you were messing with, did you?"
Right, right.
Because I have called the cosmic 911, and you, I am the light of God that always prevails. So I feel like when we call the Violet Flame into these things, they are getting cleaned up. Everything is coming to light.
Well, you know, the Pearl used to say, one with God is a majority. So when you're working with your higher self, it doesn't matter who else is with you or not on the physical plane, because you've called that divine force into action that goes to work immediately. So you don't need to round up a bunch of other people. You know, when you start to work using your higher self and those decrees and the Violet Flame and the Sword of Blue Flame, that goes to work instantaneously. And I, you know, I had a, something happen many years ago where I called Saint Germain to intercede between, in the Arab-Israeli conflict. And, the next day I heard on the radio, I turned on the news, and the commentator said the Prince of Romania is taking complete command of these negotiations between Israel and Egypt. And I never heard that again. I listened for the next 2 days, and I never heard any mention of the Prince of Romania, which is sort of code name for Saint Germain.
Oh, wow.
He used that title, Prince of Romania, for a while. So it was showing me that he had heard my prayer and was at work there. But even if, you know, one person calls for him to intercede, that gives him the right to go into action. I mean, they can act to a large degree on their own, but the more people on the earth plane that call them into action, the more they can intercede.
You know, that's what one of the things, I think Patty Diane Cota-Robles said this, that the ascended masters are being able to give such greater light and assistance in all ways. And because there are great numbers of people praying who have never prayed before, mm-hmm. Peter.
Sure.
And so you're saying that's one of the cosmic laws. You have to call for the assistance.
Absolutely. Yeah, otherwise it just kind of sits back and waits, you know?
Yes.
I mean, a lot of people, like one of the Eastern teachings is just surrender, you know, and sit back, and if God wants something done, God will do it. But that's ignoring the fact that you are God, you know? And if you want to sit back and be passive and just, you know, enjoy your Godhead or your divinity or your bliss, you can do that. But if you want to manifest a different aspect of your divinity to clean things up and to, you know, bring about a different plan, you can do that too.
Well, from what you have learned with working with Saint Germain and the other Ascended Masters, what would you say would be that to do? To clean it up. You know, it's sort of like, aside from using the violet flame, I just don't see where to start on the outer.
Well, I think, yeah, it's good not to hold a specific idea like this person should be president or that country should win this war or, you know, specific things like that where the human mind can draw the wrong conclusions. I think just using the energy, like, as you say, the violet flame clears that karma that makes people act unconsciously. I mean, so many people act in ways that's influenced by past conditioning, you know, what they're not really conscious of. Or they're influenced by negative entities or things like that. So when you call on the violet flame, that burns up all those old karmic conditions and dissolves those negative thought forms. And then when you call on the blue flame, sort of blue flame, and call those discarnate entities that are causing problems to be taken off the earth, then you clear the atmosphere to such a degree that people really have the freedom to act without that negative pressure, you know, because even though we think we're acting intelligently, we're being influenced all the time by these forces in the atmosphere around us. So when you dissolve those negative forces, then you really have the clarity and freedom to act in a proper way. And then I think just visualizing the masters in action in the earth is another gift that you have. I mean, you can, these are ancient Tibetan Buddhist teachings that have been brought over by Saint Germain into our present culture, where you can visualize a particular master, either Saint Germain or Jesus or Mary or Kuan Yin, whoever you feel aligned with, and visualize them over the Congress or the Capitol, over some foreign city, and visualize rays of light going from them down into that situation and call for the masters to intensify that. And that's a tremendous blessing that you can give to the earth. Or just visualize your higher self as one of those masters radiating down into a situation or over a hospital. Like when I drive by a hospital, I imagine either my higher self or these angels of mercy and angels of healing, sending healing rays down to everyone in that hospital. And then I ask the masters to intensify that. So those are things that we can all do. Like when I go to a movie and I sit in the theater, I'm aware that there have been a lot of horror movies and a lot of other kind of depraved movies have been shown in there, and that theater is filled with all those thought forms of you know, violence and greed and lust and all those negative conditions. And I just imagine that Saint Germain is over the theater filling it with violet light. And I call that anybody that goes into that theater from then on will be purified and raised into their Christ consciousness. So you can magnetize, like any place you go, you can dissolve the negativity there and magnetize it for good.
Well, yes, and you know, there are other thought forms that are negative that are more subtle, or subtle, as we like to say. And one of them is, you know, that theme of Romeo and Juliet has been repeated over and over, like in Titanic.
Right.
Yeah, but what they really are is glorified versions of a one-night stand, and kind of like, I mean, really, Peter, it's like that's the best most people can imagine, is having a brilliant, burning, passionate love affair that lasts for 24 hours. And then, you know, like in Romeo and Juliet, you know, my husband and I saw that, and West Side Story too, I said, mm-hmm. You know, it's real interesting. They never had to get through a fight.
Right.
They never had to get through one of those fights where you know the other person is wrong, and then you just completely surrender to love. But, you know, I got to be with my twin flame for 42 years, Peter, and there are satisfaction and joy for couples that is beyond, you know, anything that's being shown on the screen of life. I can't describe it more than that. But I use the violet flame for those things so that people will be released from the idea that you could just be a flash in the pan joy.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You do.
Yeah, well, I wish you would write a book about how to have a long-term relationship, because it seems to have been forgotten.
It's, you know what? It's choosing, it's re-choosing to have and be the joy every single day, and the satisfaction of it every single day. And my husband said it takes two things: being with the right one and having the total commitment. Mm-hmm. That means everything. And he was such an example of that. He gave me everything he had every moment.
Mm.
Of all 42 years, and he had no ego.
Mm.
I kept thinking, you know, he was in construction, and he was a contractor, and he got all kinds of constructive projects done, and he was real good at it. And I kept feeling like he was maybe sacrificing what his divine plan was to provide for me, you know, and I didn't want that. I've always been free to be a philanthropist, Peter.
Right.
And he let me guide how it was given. He just felt like that was my department. His department was being a setting for a beautiful jewel that I am.
Beautiful.
And I kept bothering him about it. You know, what are you really supposed to be doing? I felt like he was an artisan or a prophet, or, you know, I just kept feeling that in him. And finally he said, you know, I ask God and I ask God and I ask God about that every time you bring it up. And the only thing I ever get is that I'm here to see that you have everything you need to do what you're here to do. That's what I'm here to do. I do that. And it also doesn't matter much how I do it, except I like what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty powerful answer, huh?
Right, that is. You know, a lot of people say that relationship is 50-50, but I think it's 100-100. You have to take total responsibility yourself for everything that's going on, and then the other person has to do that too.
Yeah.
A lot of people get in this thing where they're like keeping score. They'll go, well, I did 50% of the work, now you have to do the other 50%, and it doesn't work that way, I don't think.
Well, and there's something to be said about giving what you give just joyfully because, you know, a dog taught me this, Peter.
Mm.
I had a dog that I lost that I adored, and then I kept trying to replace him, but I never loved the dog like I loved him.
Sure.
And one day I realized I was judging this dog and making her measure up to him, and she wasn't him, and she didn't do this, and she didn't do that. And I said, oh, my God, I'm judging her. This is what happens in relationships. I'm judging her to be unworthy of my love. And I said, why would I do that? And you know what it was? To protect myself from having my heart run over by a truck again by losing that once I let myself have it. And I got that the joy I had with that dog was that I was pouring out love.
Sure.
That's always the joy. And I think, you know, people get stuck in, well, I'm not going to pour out love because you didn't. This time and this time and this time. This proves you don't love me, and therefore, you know, why should I love you? It's sort of, it's been sort of a payback. And I was privileged, and my husband was privileged to work with some great masters. And we had, you're asking me, you know, about how do you sustain a long-term relationship, and I'm just giving you the capsule course.
Sure.
But there was a process in which you would put yourself in the other person's shoes, and then, but it got down to only one step, and one of us would always do that. And we'd be in it, you know, and really polarized, and I was right, and he was right, and there was no way out. And, and all of a sudden, I would just say, or he would just say, whoever was the most enlightened at the time would say, whoever wasn't the furthest down the black hole,
right, right.
would say, would you forgive me?
Oh, that's beautiful.
And we would just fall into each other's arms because we were able to make the love between us the most important thing. So my answer is it's sacrificing your ego. It's like my ego is on the altar for this.
Wow, that's beautiful.
And I think when you learn to love one person like that, it spreads. You know, I think that... I think if we can just learn to love one person like that completely and unreservedly and forever.
Well, I've heard the expression sometimes it's better, would you rather be right or would you rather be loved?
Or would you rather be right or would you rather be happy?
Exactly.
Well, you know, I have a friend, and we've been friends since like 1981 or something. And she lived with us for a while after she got divorced, and she wanted to be with the family and do healing. And so she and I did healing work together, and it was the best of having your best friend stay overnight and being grown up and married. I mean, it was. I loved having her live with us, but she used to make me really wrong, and I finally one day I said, you know, I don't want to be in a relationship with someone that I owe.
Right.
Because I never get to give anything. I'm just paying off this gigantic debt.
Right.
I said, why do you want me to be indebted to you?
Yeah.
You know what she said?
What's that?
She said, because when this is over, when you leave me, this relationship, you'll be the one that didn't do it right, not me.
Wow.
So, you know, I think that model of the world has been in romantic relationship, has been in, you know, like, I'm going to make you somebody I won't miss, closing
right.
our heart.
Right.
Yeah. You're the wrong dog. Dog.
Right. Right.
And I think we're coming. like I've gotten off here a little bit. Oh, I wanted you to call the violet flame in the way that you use it.
Well,
you said the way you do it in theaters.
Yeah, I just want to mention one thing. These guys just showed up to do the lawn, and if I hope it's not too loud what they're doing out there.
I'm not hearing a thing.
Okay,
is it
that's
distracting
good.
You?
Yeah, let me just shut this window for a minute, okay?
Good plan.
Now, hold on.
Sure.
Okay, there. Let me know if it gets too loud. I don't. Anyway, I say I am the violet consuming flame in action, blazing up, in, around, and through me, and throughout this theater. And that flame is fully self-sustained. And then I just visualize like I'm standing on this amethyst, a gigantic amethyst. And there's a spotlight underneath that, blazing from the center of the earth, right up through me, and this just pillar of violet light all around me. Or you can visualize like a neon tube.
Yes.
You know the way they kind of sizzle and hiss and stuff like that, or they yeah. Well, just imagine it. That tube is all around you. It extends about 3 feet on either side of you, and that is just blazing up around you.
And around the theater.
Yeah, and through the theater. In fact, I used to do that. I used to drive back and forth across the country quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
And I had there was a cruise control button, you know, on the car, on the gear shift. I guess there's a special little shift lever there. And when I would push that button in, I would just say in my mind, that's the violet consuming flame button.
Mm-hmm.
And that whenever I turn that on, that's sending the violet flame through me. So I would keep that visualization going across the country. And I'm going to tell you, when I drove from New York once out here with that, you know, cruise control violet flame button on, you know, depressed most of the time. And when I got here, I had several people come up to me and say, "What have you done? You look 10 years younger." You know, so, I mean, maybe I'd say you can think of something you can do for your beauty too, you know.
Yeah.
Definitely for your longevity. Because, you know, all this work is coming out now that Masaru Emoto did, that Japanese scientist, where he photographs water crystals.
Yes.
And it turns out that just putting a label on a bottle of water changes it. And since our bodies are, you know, at least 70% water, just every thought that we think is constantly affecting our physical form. So if you think that the violet flame is purifying all of my cells and that there's a Christ light in every cell of my body and every cell is now perfect and every cell is happy and glad to be here and all of my organs are happy and functioning perfectly, that's really something great that you can do. You know, in fact, some of the things they do in Chinese medicine is they say, see your liver smiling.
See, you know, your liver smiling.
Yeah, and feel how happy your kidneys are, you know? And that they really enjoy working for you and what they're doing, and you're really a great boss, and they really love you, and you can love them back, you know? And just see all of the organs in your body as kind of a big happy family all working together, you know? And just like you cleanse your physical body, you can cleanse the organs in the violet flame.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, there's no reason that, you know, we should have to suffer with these negative conditions, you know, any longer than we have to. So, and the other thing I do with the violet flame is, like, if I'm working on something at a distance, you know, like say I want to help the president, I just see the whole, like, White House, like, become the Violet House instead of the White House, you know, and see it like it's a temple made of amethyst, and it's just being inundated with light. And negative energy that's been sent there will be dissolved. Because, you know, a lot of people angry at the president, angry at the United States, and you can help dissolve that negativity by just that kind of visualization.
Oh, that's really good. You know what else, Peter, I've been doing is is sometimes I do it 108 times, and Marlise told me about this, is, but I noticed that as I'm using the violet flame, it teaches me of itself, and it also teaches me how to intensify it, to call forth the most I possibly can, and the fullness of its activity on Earth. And I started out saying, I am the violet consuming flame in manifestation and action. And I was doing that 108 times. And then it started to be, I am the inner essence of the cosmic sun concentration of the violet consuming flame of a billion suns, invincibly expanding and eternally sustained, everywhere present in manifestation and action by the power of the great, great silence, in the name of mighty victory, in the name of the seven mighty Elohim, in the name of Saint Germain, Jesus Christ, and the legions of light throughout creation.
Wow, that's a powerful one.
And sometimes I only say that one like 22 times.
Wow.
But I feel like as you use the violet flame, it will teach you of itself.
Exactly.
And it will suggest to you how it can be intensified for the service of all life, for the upliftment of all life. And I have noticed lately, and I've asked other people if they've noticed, that there is a visible presence of brighter light on the planet. It's brighter all the time the sun is up.
Wow.
Have you noticed that?
You mean during the day?
Yes, and I feel like, you know, I've been shown before that when you call the violet flame, it's like things that are like smoke are kind of removed from the body and the atmosphere. And
and
we're really asking for, when we call the violet flame, for everything to be removed that is less than the purity and perfection of the Ascended Master's octave. I mean, that's what you've learned from Saint Germain, right?
Right. Well, I remember being in L.A. once, and there was this terrible smog.
Yes.
And I was sitting in a restaurant, and I started talking to a stranger. They heard I was from Mount Shasta, and they wanted to talk, and I mentioned the violet flame, and I said, well, we got really talking about the violet flame, and while we were talking, it created this real focus, and I was just visualizing the violet flame blazing through Los Angeles. And we walk outside, I'd say half an hour later, and the air was as clear as it is in Mount Shasta.
I mean,
woo-hoo! We went in, there was, you know, visibility, you know, like 100 yards or something. It was one of those things where the air is brown, you know?
Yeah.
Brown and green and gray, you know?
Like the clouds in the air from airplanes?
Yeah, and just the smog, when there was an inversion, you know, when the air gets trapped in that basin. And it had been going on for several days. And when we went outside after that violet flame activity, that was completely gone, and the air was just crystal clear and bright blue sky overhead. So,
well, I think we only need to give some attention to calling that forth to be being invincibly expanding and eternally sustained, everywhere present, Peter.
Totally. Another thing I do is I imagine I'm in the inner Earth, you know, and I'm sitting in a temple there. I do this every morning. And I'm like turned into this amethyst, and I'm sending out, inside that amethyst is a sun, and I'm sending out rays of violet light through the whole planet. I mean, it fills the interior of the Earth, and it radiates right out through the surface into space. And I ask Saint Germain, I say, you know, I am the presence of Saint Germain, blazing the violet consuming flame throughout the Earth and keeping that activity forever fully self-sustained.
Say that again. I want to write it.
I am the presence of Saint Germain, blazing the violet consuming flame throughout the Earth, and can keeping it forever fully self-sustained.
I am the presence of Saint Germain, blazing
the violet consuming flame throughout the Earth, and keeping it forever fully self-sustained.
I'm sorry.
Cool. You got it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Fully self-sustained.
Yeah, you know, and I'll tell you something. I know someone that heard about the violet flame, but they couldn't remember exactly how to say it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they were going into a hotel room in some foreign city, and they opened the door to go to their room, and the room was dark, and they heard this voice inside that said, "Get her. Let's get her."
Uh-huh.
You know, and they were like these entities in the room. And she, like, freaked out, but she remembered hearing about the violet flame, but she couldn't remember the decree or what it was exactly called, so she said, "Violet light, come forth." And,
close enough.
Yeah, and it happened. There was like a shriek, and these beings were dissolved.
Wow.
And then she had a perfectly good night's sleep, you know.
Wow.
But if you can just remember the violet part of it, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Peter, I can't believe we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for being here and ask you to come back soon. Tell people how they can reach you and get your books.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much, Iris, and hope to see you up here soon.
Thank you. Tell people how they can reach you, Peter.
Oh, PeterMountShasta.com. Just P-E-T-E-R. MTSHASTA.com. That's my website.
And you are the author of one of the more beautiful books that's ever been made available on this planet. I Am the Open Door.
Right.
And it has a picture of the Ascent the Master Saint Germain on the front. And then your new book that's coming out, Adventures of a Western Mystic.
Right.
Apprentice to the Masters. I thank
right.
you for being that, Peter.
Well, thank you, my dear, and very kind of you to have this show and to help so many people with it.
Well, very kind of you to share what you know, your accomplishment, and give your light. God bless you. Thank you for being with us, and may all your dreams come true.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep shining until then. Happy trails to you till we meet again. I love you. And this is my wish for you. That all your dreams come true and are 1,000 times more wonderful than you ever dreamed possible. Amen, women, children, and yeehaw!